Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show. My name is Lindsay. The title of tonight's show is Rephrasing and Redesigning a Degenerative Disease. Interesting topic. I have two enormously interesting guests. My first guest is Janae Gerrans. She is a photographer. She's also a writer, has a really strong background in journalism. And you were a reporter at one time, too, weren't you, Janae?
I was, yes.
So I am really thrilled to have you on many levels.
Thank you.
And I also have with me Dr. Christian Hagaseth. He is a retired psychiatrist, an author, a former TV show producer, and a professional public speaker. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Janae, we have two very varied backgrounds here between you and Chris. How did this come about? You started a project called I Had a Dream.
So it's a multifaceted national art project. It features 10 inspiring Americans over about 24 months, and it features each subject through an in-depth article, a music video, and portraits. And at the end of the project, the portraits of the subjects are featured in rotating gallery exhibits and also published in a book.
Where did this come about?
I think it's because people like to tell me their stories, and I have a background in journalism, so Right. It comes naturally to write stories. And I'm passionate about dissolving stereotypes and uncovering layers and basically writing about people who are changing the world. And that's what Christian here is doing.
So this is your I Had a Dream project. Now you have a website for this?
Right. It's ihadadreamproject.com.
And people can go to that if
yes.
they need. And we'll tell you why in a little bit, why
okay.
it's a really good place to go to. What kinds of people are you featuring in I Had a Dream?
So our subjects are all doing something courageously that nobody else is doing, basically redefining our nation's social and political structures on all fronts. They come from all different backgrounds, but they share a common core concern for humanity. And so they're actively pursuing positive change that actually might appear radical or unique. So they're transmuting stereotypes, speaking out against injustice. They're dedicating their life to a mission they're so passionate about. It's almost an obsession. So there's not just one category. It encompasses the most important issues today, whether it's relationships, politics, economics, race, health, so on.
And tonight we're kind of focusing on one of your health.
Right, Christian.
Christian, what's your role in this project besides starting it and
right.
getting the original idea?
So I'm the writer and the photographer, and then I also have a filmmaker and two assistants.
So this isn't just a talk thing.
No.
You are turning this into videos, and where can people see these videos?
IHadADreamProject.com, and then we're hoping for it to go viral through social media, and then, of course, at the very end, we'll have the rotating portrait exhibits and then the book.
How new is this? When did this all start?
It was about December 2016, so pretty recent.
It's very, very recent. How many subjects do you have so far?
Christian is actually our first subject, and we're on the second. Christian has Parkinson's disease. He takes no medication for it. He sweats it out through yoga and intense exercise, and he'll tell you all about that in a minute. The second subject is in Los Angeles. His name's Mike Preisner. He's a 33-year-old American political activist and a Corporal U.S. Army veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he's now the leader of anti-war and Veterans for Peace movements. And he's also a writer and producer of a new show called The Empire Files. And so he exposes the ruling class and their true motives for war, basically colonialism. He's just extremely bright. And just like Christian, people really need to hear his message.
Christian, how did you meet this lovely, talented lady?
Well, it's interesting. I didn't remember having met her, but we actually attended the same spiritual center here in Fort Collins a couple years ago called the Whole Life Center for Spiritual Living. And apparently then we had a conversation, and I tend to be very welcoming and also speak openly about having Parkinson's and doing so well. And that impressed Janae enough that when this came around in her creative cycle, she called me And I was thrilled. I mean, this young woman has an enormous vision. Big doesn't do justice to how expansive it is. And I'm honored that she selected me to be the first person to go through the process. And for me, it's been extremely positive. I've drawn a lot of attention to what I do, and it's all been favorable.
I'm also honored to have both of you on the air with me, because I think this is the first time you've ever been on live community radio, the two of you together. Janae, having started the I Had a Dream project, and Chris, you being the first person in the project. So
yep.
This is a big honor for me.
It's a good deal all the way around.
It is, isn't it?
Okay.
I mean, in a new studio, and you can't get much better.
So after we're done,
this.
We'll go out and get some champagne.
Okay, I think we should do that. So, Chris, you were active in the medical community. You were an author, former TV show producer, all this fascinating stuff.
Well, let me give you a little bit of the biography,
because
it's crazy. It covers a lot of area. I started at the beginning that I was born and raised in North Dakota by Norwegian bachelor farmers. Went from there to college and then to medical school, and then I volunteered for the military at the time of the Vietnam War and served with the Marines for 5.5 years during Vietnam. After that, I spent a few years in an emergency room trying to figure out what the hell I was going to do with my life. Finally, I decided psychiatry was the best thing for me, and I did. In the early 1980s, I coupled with a guy who was amazingly creative. He was an actor and a mime. His name was C.W. Metcalf. And he and I had a synergy that was terrific, and it was on health and humor. And within a year of our getting together, we went everywhere. We went to the Fox Chase Cancer Research Center, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, the Mayo Clinic. We went around talking about the importance of humor. I wrote a book on it a number of years later, sold 17,000 copies.
What's the name of the book?
A Laughing Place, The Art and Psychology of Positive Humor in Love and Adversity. It's old and dated because I talk about what to do about humor, but there wasn't the internet now, and that changes things.
True.
So if I have time, I'll probably rewrite the book. But my good fortune was, approximately 10 years ago, I had an episode, now this people will surprise people, of unbelievable tectonic constipation. And only in retrospect do I know that constipation is a very important evidence early of Parkinson's.
Really?
Yes. The Parkinson's pathology involves the bowel, and it involves so much more of the body than merely the brain that it's a fascinating disease. I didn't know that I had Parkinson's until about 3 years later when, as I'm walking along with my wife, hiking in these beautiful foothills, she said, you're stooping over. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm going uphill. No, you're stooping over. Well, of course, no husband wants to have his wife correct him. So I said, no, you're wrong. And then I saw the shadow I was casting on the ground, and my God, I was stooping over. I began to notice that my right arm wasn't swinging. And when I'm in the car, I noticed if my hand was on the steering wheel, my right thumb began to have its own movement opportunity. So I knew something was up. But I did what a doctor's supposed to do, which is don't diagnose yourself.
Well, congratulations
on
that.
So anyway, I saw my internal medicine doctor, and among other things, when he was doing my annual exam, I said, I have developed this tremor in my right hand, and I wonder what it is. And he did a thorough examination that lasted between 10 and 12 seconds, and then said to me, it's an essential tremor, nothing to worry about, old people get it. 6 months went by. Well, being a board-certified psychiatrist, our board certification is by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. So I, in fact, have extra training in neurology. And I said, you know, he's full of horse puppies, and I have Parkinson's. My wife and I discussed it, and finally I went to a neurologist, a fellow I knew here in town. And he said, what are you here for? And I said, I've got Parkinson's. He said, who diagnosed it? I said, I did. And he said, well, let me check. And so he had me do a number of things. And then came something that this is critically important. You've got to hear the tone of voice. He sat down in front of me. His voice became deeper, and he said, Chris, I'm very sorry to tell you, you have Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease, as you know, is incurable. It is progressive. It is degenerative. The course is downhill. We have medications we can use that will help with some symptoms. But ultimately, it leads to immobility, and ultimately, if something else doesn't kill you, death.
He didn't read your book.
Well, no, but you know, he's doing what some doctors do, which is they are trying to tell you. Well, you see, I practiced a lot of hypnosis in my day, and when somebody lowers their voice, they change their tone, they lean forward, and they talk to you in this tone of voice and say, you have a degenerative disease, it's progressive, and there's no cure, and it's going downhill. That programs my mind. As the entire conscious mind of Western medicine has embedded in it, when it comes to Parkinson's, this is a progressive, degenerative, incurable disease that's all downhill.
And that holds true for you, for her, for every single person who has it.
For everybody.
Yeah.
And then the medications are somewhat helpful, but in time they backfire. And typically people that have had the disease for 6-7 years are beginning to have trouble with medication and get side effects from the medication that are every bit as bad as the disease itself.
Exactly.
Now, the night after he talked to me, I came home, and the first thing I have to make really clear is I did not feel bad. I did not feel like I had been given a terminal diagnosis. What I did experience was a challenge. What am I going to do about this? Now, I've done some athletic things in my life. Well, I was never an athlete growing up, but the Marine Corps helped me become that way.
Yes.
And so Mike Curiel, my neurologist, he's an ultramarathoner. He runs 100-mile X things. So he said to me, when I said to him, but Mike, what can I do? He said, exercise, exercise, exercise. That was embedded in my brain stronger than this is a degenerative progressive disease. So I went home that night and sat down at the table and said, okay, well, I do jog now. I will still jog, but I have a really bad foot that needs surgery, and I've got a really bad knee that's had 3 surgeries. But I'm going to be doing more aerobic work, and there's a steep hill. I lived over by the foothills.
Yes.
And so I would climb up that with the greatest speed I could. But the other thing I did that night is I said, I'm going to take up a yoga. I was 70 at that point. I'd never done a stitch of yoga in my life. And I went to the Raintree Athletic Club and started taking yoga. And the first day I walked out of class and said, I feel different.
Where did yoga come from?
Yoga, because...
In your mind.
Where did... because I said, I need to know my body better. I need to do something with my body. And I believe that yoga will help me extend my brain so it covers every cell in my body. And it was helpful. And then I did have the great good fortune of connecting with a marvelous teacher. Her name is Jennifer Atkins. And Jennifer took an interest in me and went on, and I learned yoga in classes, took it from other people too, and a year went by, and something was very unusual. Several of my symptoms of Parkinson's were getting better. When I was first diagnosed, my face was what they call a mask face. Yep. The face is immobile. It doesn't smile. It's just glum. And I had tremor in my right leg and quite a bit of tremor in my right arm. And I had rigidity in my right arm, and it did when they it would cogwheel and stuff like that. My balance was bad. My speech was getting very quiet. So I had quite a number of what we call motor symptoms.
Yes.
And so they were getting better, and I wasn't taking anything. After a year of that, I saw my neurologist, and he couldn't believe it. He said, "You're better." I said, "I know." He said, "But you're not taking any medicine." I said, "I know." And I said, "What's doing it?" He said, "Must be the exercise. See you next year." Well, I then said, "What am I doing?" My best hypothesis to myself was the sweating was important. I said, "I'm sweating out my Parkinson's disease." And I took that phrase and started a website, sweatingoutpd.com. And its original purpose was to simply tell other people my story. Hey, look at me. I'm doing well. Maybe you can do well too.
Yeah.
That was the whole purpose behind it. And that now has been about 5 years ago.
Wow. Is that when you were diagnosed 5 years ago?
Yeah, I was diagnosed 6 years ago. I'm 76, and I was diagnosed just after my 70th birthday. But it took me a year before the neurologist said I was diagnosed, but I knew I had it
right
at about that time.
Right.
Well, I waited for the next 4 years to go by to see how much worse I got, and I didn't. I continued to get better. And I still have a very delightful tremor in my right hand, which I rather enjoy because it reminds me I still have Parkinson's. Right. I'm not cured. I have Parkinson's, but I'm doing well with it. I'm doing really well with it. And anybody hearing my voice or watching my face will say, you don't have Parkinson's. In fact, when I meet people and I tell them, they often are surprised. You have Parkinson's. Well, yeah. Oh, I saw your hand. Yeah, my right hand trembles. So about a year and a half ago, a professor, a retired professor here at CSU in neuroscience, a good friend of mine, Howard Nornes, he got talking to me about a process called neuroplasticity, which is the way that the brain heals itself. And while I'm in medical school, was taught that the brain was immutable and forever unchanging, we now understand that is not true. I said, why am I doing so well? He said, you must have invoked neuroplasticity. Well, I began to feel pretty hot about that. I had volunteered to do a clinical trial. I'd already volunteered for a couple clinical trials, but this one was in Denver, and it was at the medical school, what they call a movement disorder specialist. That's a neurologist that specializes in movement disorders, Parkinson's and MS and stuff. It was a cognitive trial, and I thought, oh, I'm beginning to have some trouble with my memory. You know, I'm having some problems, so I'm going to go. And they worked me up one end and down the other for 12 hours that day. And at the end of the day, they rejected me from the study because I showed no cognitive change.
Wow.
I was fine. He said, we have nothing to prove in your case. And I again asked him, why am I doing so well? He said, must be the exercise. Goodbye. You know, why doesn't this impress you? This is a big deal. Well, at that point, I understood. I went back to my neurologist and I said, let's make sure I've really got Parkinson's. Make sure I don't have some kind of Parkinsonism. And there's a diagnostic test that can be done called a DAT scan, D-A-T. While it doesn't diagnose Parkinson's, if you have a tremor that looks like Parkinson's and the DAT scan is positive, it demonstrates that you have a remarkable deficiency of dopamine activity in a part of your brain called the substantia nigra. And I did. In fact, the most part that was done was in the left side, and the right side has got the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So that merely confirmed it. And he's retiring. And I said, but Mike, what about this? He said, it's got to be the exercise. Well, my friend Howard told me about a guy that had written a book called The Brain's Way of Healing Itself, Dr. Norman Doidge. And Dr. Doidge has written two books. And one of them featured a person with Parkinson's who has gotten remarkably better. And his name is John Pepper, and he lives in South Africa. Well, I wanted to talk to Dr. Doidge. I looked up his page, and would you believe he lives and practices in Toronto, but also practices in New York City, but he was going to be in Denver the following week.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't care what the name of the conference was. I signed up for it. And when I got there and watched him speak the first half of the keynote, I came up at the break, and he was shuffling papers up on his lectern, and I said, Dr. Doidge, my name is Dr. Chris Hageseth, and I have Parkinson's disease. I've had it for 6 years, 5 years at that point, and I don't take medicine. He dropped his pencil on the floor, and he said, what? He said, walk back, walk toward me, and he watched. You have Parkinson's disease? I said, yes. He said, well, how do you know? I said, well, I've been diagnosed by two board-certified neurologists, and I've also had tests at the university.
Right.
And I've had the DAT scan, which is positive. He said, let me see you walk some more. Well, then I did for him what I love to do for people is I immediately got down and did a downward facing dog, an upward plank, and did a thread the needle. And I began to go through yoga moves, going up into a warrior two, warrior. I can't do a warrior three. I can't have the balance. But warrior one, two. He was speechless. And he said, when people come back from the break, there was about 250 people in the audience. He said, well, can I interview you? And I said, yes. And I did. And people listened, and they watched. And when they saw me go to my warrior two and everything, and they said, no medicine, they applauded, and they were excited. And he then interviewed me in his room for about an hour and said, I believe you represent maybe the best example of neuroplasticity changing Parkinson's from being this terrible disease to a much more minor condition. Unfortunately, he is extremely busy in this world, and so he has not kept up much of a correspondence. But that's how it got going. And so starting last July, I set up my website to now counsel and get people in to talk about what I had done. I knew there was a mental component, but I wasn't sure what it was. And so I embarked on guided imagery and hypnosis that could help people. I accomplished that, and I also gave prescriptions for exercise. Over the ensuing 9 months, I had over 20 volunteers who did pay me some money to undergo the training. Nobody had the dramatic reversal I did, but several people had significant improvement. Only 2 people dropped out. I'd say about 5 people felt they did not get anything from it. So nobody got as good as I was, but a lot of people got better, and a lot of people said it was really worth the money. I pulled everything back and said, what's going on? And I now am coming upon what I think are the mental parts.
I am so glad you're talking about neuroplasticity. Your story is just incredible. Being semi-diagnosed with Parkinson's at the beginning, and then finally you took the reins in your own hands and said, no, I have it. Then not taking the conventional course of medicine, which is pill after pill after pill after pill, and you went out on a whole branch of your own with exercise, exercise, exercise.
And yoga, yoga, yoga.
And well, yoga's exercise. Well, what other one?
Meditation. Mindfulness meditation.
I want to talk about the neuroplasticity because I am fascinated by it. When we get a paper cut, it never enters our mind that the paper cut is not going to heal, right? You don't go rushing off to the emergency room and have them put stitches in your finger because you have a paper cut. If we get an even bigger cut, it never enters our mind that it's not going to heal. So where do we draw the line in healing? I like that you're talking about getting in touch, in tuned with your body through the yoga. You have medical training. You learned about the body. You know exactly where the liver is and the kidney and the gallbladder and all those kind of things. You used to. Well, they're still there, Doc. Okay. So, but you reached out in a whole different way. You reached into not only knowing where all the parts are, but communicating with all the parts and being aware of all the parts through yoga. And now I'm hearing your another secret weapon, meditation. How did that come into the picture?
I have studied meditation off and on in my life. Unlike most people who dabble in meditation, I try it a while and it doesn't work. I try it a while and it doesn't work. I do this and that. 15 years ago, I spent a week with Jack Kornfield down in Taos. Oh, it was silent and it was all vegetarian. And when I left Taos, one thing I was interested in was why people thought that driving over 15 miles an hour would get them anywhere any faster, because I thought 15 miles an hour was just fine. And so meditation, I couldn't get in the groove. But give me Parkinson's. And then I went and read the books by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and suddenly, within 4 weeks, I was meditating 45 minutes every morning, and then going from meditation to yoga for another 20 minutes. All of this before my first cup of coffee.
Wow. What was it about his book, Zinn's book on meditation, that turned you on so much?
His book, it's got a terrible title, but it's memorable. It's called Full Catastrophe Living. But what he does is he describes it, and somehow it clicked. Maybe it was the urgency of Parkinson's, mm-hmm. but somehow I got in and I followed my breath, and my mind stopped wanting to go anywhere else but with my breath, and a peacefulness began to fill all of me. And from the yoga and from the meditation, every cell in my body was part of my consciousness. And when I finished, I knew I felt peaceful, calm, healing, good. And so I have now practiced meditation. It's been about 2 years now. I meditate whenever things need to be remeditated, because I find when I do it in the morning and something gets rough during the day, I can stop and I'll recover that meditative state within 30 seconds. Yeah. And I can be there for a minute or two and I get all the benefits again. But this now begs the question, what went on mentally for me at the beginning? And I'm thinking I'm beginning to find it. And I have recently read a book that has to do with the concept of mindset. And mindset means there's a complicated structure in a mind about a subject. And this mindset has 2 directions it can go. One, when confronted, it can go growing. And the other, it's fixed and it breaks down. And I realize that patients, persons with Parkinson's disease, more often have a fixed mindset. And that has been also inculcated by way our neurologists who've told them those words.
Exactly.
Our society has a mindset about Parkinson's. If I tell somebody I have Parkinson's, they look at me and they look sad and empathic, which is very nice of them. But yet it's also saying you have a relatively hopeless prognosis. The society as a whole, you talk to somebody who doesn't know about Parkinson's, but they'll say, well, the neighbor across the street from me had Parkinson's and he had a terrible time. Or I had an aunt who had it and she just died a terrible death. There are no happy stories about Parkinson's in the world, and by God, I'm one of them.
You're the happy story.
I am the happy story because I feel something new, and this is new for Janae and for everybody. I'm denouncing it for the first time because I recognize how important exercise is. But in the United States, the medical establishment is pretty strong, and I am looked upon by some people pretty suspect that maybe I am giving false hope, or maybe I'm a charlatan, or what have you. And I, for reasons that come from the deepest part of my subconscious, have now made contact with people with Parkinson's disease in the country of Uganda.
Wow.
Uganda has 36 million people, and that means one out of every 100 adults may have Parkinson's. That's a lot.
It is.
It's a country that's poorer than Haiti. I have contacted the Parkinson's group there because they don't get medicine because they can't afford it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to set up, I've established a 501c3 tax exempt charity, and I am going to make it my life's work at this point to get to Uganda, find the people with Parkinson's, get them into meditation. But the exercise part, which for me now is called mindful swift walking and yoga. And I want to treat a population that way because they don't have an alternative. And I want to see if the outcome for those people in Uganda will be better than Americans who are taking meds.
Can you do any of this through videos and online? Would that help you also?
Or
help the Ugandans?
Well, right now I'm getting my 501c3 set up
right,
so I can be a charitable and get money to do the project. And that's in the process as we speak. So I'm now communicating with them by Skype.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be working with a variety of video options.
Fabulous.
And the fellow I told you about in South Africa, John Pepper, he and I talk every week because he's 82.
Does he have Parkinson's?
He has Parkinson's. And he doesn't take medicine.
And how's he doing?
He's doing great. There's a woman here in Northern California by the name of Bianca Molle, M-O-L-L-E. And she has confronted her Parkinson's with using Qigong.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is asymptomatic. So
wow.
I am networking around the world. I've got a naturopath in Australia that I'm working with who likewise has found it. Now I'm saying, the naturopath doesn't exercise like me, and he says aspartame will kill you, and I drink diet drinks all the time. What's our commonality? And our commonality is a mindset. He has a mindset that says he can do something, so I know how important mindset is. You can tell I'm fired up.
Yeah.
When I was young, I was influenced by Albert Schweitzer. In the late 50s, there was a doctor in Vietnam by the name of Tom Dooley, and he left the Navy and stayed in Vietnam to treat people. I was moved by him, and I wanted very much to practice medicine in an underdeveloped country. I wanted to do that. But then the war came, and I volunteered, and I served, and I'm grateful that I did. And I married, and I had children, and that dream has kind of gone away until now, when I recognize at 76, in vitally good health, I'm allowed to have my dream that Janae helped me recognize,
yeah,
that I can do something that I dreamt of doing when I was 16.
Your dream never left you.
No.
Your dream was always in there waiting for the opportunity and the timing.
Yes.
To get perfect, and that's exactly what happened to you. You turned a potentially degenerating terminal
look,
condition.
Look, most people, if they don't die of it, they die with it. And when they die with it, they're shaking and they have medicine they hate.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's not me. And I'm not going to die of it. I will die with it, but not of it.
Exactly. Let's back up a little bit, Chris. Way at the beginning, you said something really interesting, that the beginning onsets of Parkinson's is not the uncontrollable tremors, which can happen in any of your limbs. It's actually very, very chronic constipation.
Well, that's part of it. Let me go ahead and give you a little of the science of Parkinson's. We categorize the symptoms of Parkinson's in two ways. One are called non-motor symptoms, and the other are motor symptoms. Non-motor symptoms predate motor symptoms usually.
Okay.
So when you ask somebody about, when did you get diagnosed with Parkinson's, they'll say, well, when was I diagnosed? Or when I look back, when did I have my first symptoms? And it's always a difference of 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
That's why I looked back and said, now, in retrospect, I knew that constipation was part of it. But the non-motor symptoms are legion. Sexual dysfunction is very prominent. Urinary problems, and I have had problems with urinary incontinence. It's called urge incontinence.
Yes.
You can't get to the bathroom in time and you pee your pants. I found out what to do for that. And I took medicine, but I said, what in the hell are you doing taking medicine?
Exactly.
So I stopped it. And I do Kegel exercises, and I do them while I'm doing yoga. And I have only tinkled lightly in my pants twice in the last 3 months.
All of us postmenopausal women can relate to that.
Postmenopausal men, too. Okay.
And postmenopausal men, that's very, very true.
Yeah, so those are a couple of symptoms, but there's cognitive changes. We all lose our sense of smell. I haven't smelled, and I used to enjoy the most wonderful wine, and I can't appreciate the bouquet of wine. So one thing is, the wine I drink is called Ménage à Trois. I love the name.
Terrific.
And it's a good wine. And it's only $10. And I get the pleasure out of it I used to get by drinking Chateau Aubryon from France. And it cost $140 a bottle.
Exactly.
So this is a real win with Parkinson's for me. I can drink cheap wine and enjoy it better.
So your taste is still there.
My taste is there, and I love the effect it has on my body and my mind.
Yeah.
I like. Interesting. Let me talk about cannabis, because everybody's
going to
want.
Good point.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm in Colorado, so I mean.
We can talk about it.
We can talk about it. We can use it. I grew it in my basement, and I followed a lot of protocols. I grew quite a bit, and I shared some with other people with Parkinson's. And here's the interesting thing. Is that of the 16 people with Parkinson's who I shared it with and discussed it with, only 2 continue to use it.
Really?
It is not the magic bullet that people like to think. And then I took a graduate course from California in cannabis medicine. It was 10-hour postgraduate hours, and studied it in considerable detail. The one substance that they think may be helpful in Parkinson's is the CBD part, not the THC, so you don't get high.
Right.
But the issue that I found with the CBD is we couldn't tell if people got any better. The only thing I saw were placebo responses, and if you're going to get high-quality CBD like Charlotte's Web that's been used for the children with seizures, and it works, you're going to be spending $120 a month on something that you have no idea whether it works or not. So I did. I took Charlotte's Web for 3 months, and I could find no change. And frankly, I thought, I want to save that $120 to do something else. So I don't discourage anybody, but I really encourage people to not jump on the bad wagon and say, oh, ho, ho, ho. The 2 people who are using it now regularly are not interested in the CBD. They want the THC because they are people who have a very nice trip with it.
Yes.
It lowers anxiety. It enhances sleep. And so I think that for the targeted symptom, because you see, Parkinson's, anxiety is a big part of it. And I saw a video of a guy with Parkinson's, and he was shaking more than Michael Fox does on a bad day. And he got his joint, and he got it up to his lips, and he began to smoke, and then gradually all the tremor went away, and people said, see, it cures tremor. No, it doesn't cure tremor. It cures anxiety. And anxiety amplifies our tremor. And so I would say to people, If it agrees with you, by all means do it. I happen to be one of those people that I do not like being high. THC and I do not get along. Ethyl alcohol in the form of a red wine and I do very nicely together. Yeah.
Chris, what does your typical day look like exercise? Because you've made it so very, very abundantly clear that the meditation, the walking, the... What do you call your walk again? I love
mindful,
it.
Swift walking.
Mindful, swift walking and yoga are kind of your three pillars of strength here and what's making dramatic, demonstrable changes in you.
I've had a long time to look at different exercise. And I also have done Tabata, high-intensity interval training in the gym, which I still do from time to time. What I have found is I think the best high-intensity training is done using running. And so I will once a week wind sprint.
Which even with the bad hips and the bad knees?
Oh, well, I got my foot fixed. My knee doesn't work that great, but wind sprints don't take a long time. It's not like pounding, jogging for a mile a mile.
True.
Once a week or once every 2 weeks, I will go to the track, get myself stretched out amply, and then get on the ball and do about 8 to 10 100-yard wind sprints. That's a minor part of what I do, but I wanted to mention it. The most important exercise is mindful, swift walking. And mindful, swift walking says, number one, the word is mindful. And here is the heart of what I do with Parkinson's. Mindful means I am aware of all of the places my body is at the moment, and I correct them consciously with my mind, mindfully in the moment, so that I never hunch over. I always stand up straight. I drop my shoulders back. I drop my shoulders down. I do these things and am conscious. When I get out of the car at a grocery store, my thought goes to, I'm going to stand straight. I'm dropping my shoulders. I'm pulling my shoulders back. My head is top on my shoulders. And I'm going to stride out with a heel strike, roll through with each foot. That's the mindfulness part. The swift walking part is, I think the worst thing in the world, because Parkinson's slows us down, is don't go slow. And so I walk, and my arms are swinging, and I remember marching, and I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore. But... it's the, I got that from John Pepper in South Africa, because he found that if he mindfully swift walks 5 kilometers every other day, he has control of his Parkinson's. I do my yoga and meditation virtually every day, although I, in all honesty, when circumstances in life gets in the way, it sometimes gets skipped or shortened, but I do my best.
Do you notice a difference when you happen to miss a day or two?
A day or two isn't, but I had a illness in the family and I was gone for several days and wasn't in a position where that worked. And I miss it. I come back right now and I'm aware that it's got to get going and I will get going. But the swift walking means walk fast enough that you can't carry on a conversation. Walk fast enough that you're short of breath. So I say, don't take the dog when you do this. You're not strolling. And if you have a friend with you, you're not talking. You're sweating.
You're purposeful walking.
Yes,
deliberate,
it's
purposeful.
Conscious, mindful walking with speed.
I hear a lot of be here now.
Yes. Yeah.
Got everything it. About this is be here now.
Aware every second. Right now, I'm aware of how hard my right hand is shaking on my left ankle because when I talk and get anxious, my tremor increases. But I'm also aware of the fact that my shoulders are feeling a little tense, and that's normal because of the edge tension. However, I am relaxed otherwise. My face is relaxed.
It is.
And my voice is well modulated.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. You're a professional speaker.
Yes.
You're still professionally speaking.
I would love to, but lately people haven't been willing to pay me for it, and so that's the difference between being a professional speaker and a public speaker.
Aha. Uh-huh. Public means you don't get paid?
Well,
like me?
Yeah, like you right now.
Okay.
But I want to translate this to a talk that applies to everybody, and I think it occurs around the concept of mindset. Now, that says volumes, and that is the message I would have. It's because people allow themselves to get old. They have the old age mindset. I am getting old. It's time to slow down. Bull puppy.
Yes. I just did a radio show, believe it or not, this month.
Yeah.
With psychologists, and it was ageism.
Ageism. Oh, yes.
Ageism.
Oh.
Yeah. And well, it was essentially what you're saying. If what you think is what you're going to get, if you listen to the doctor who lowers his voice and looks down and slows down and gives you the bad news, you buy into that, that's what you're going to get.
I was just at a retirement community in North Carolina that the requirements for being in the retirement community is $1 million and having advanced degrees and wearing really nice clothes. And you know what? Those people didn't move very well. They moved gracefully, but the men, they kind of hunched over and stuff. And it's like, you don't have to be that way.
You also don't have to be there.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
surround yourself
well,
with this.
Well, they like this. It because they're all members of the same country club. And that's true.
Yeah, well, we could be members of the same country club, but not live in the old folks' home.
I'm not joining any country clubs because I'm too common of a guy.
I tend to doubt that, Chris, and I think a whole bunch of our listeners would agree with me.
I'm a common guy in that I want to associate with people on the basis of their intellect and character and not their money.
What's next on the agenda? What's coming up with Chris?
Well, he was the first subject, and we're focused on the second right now. But at the end, he will be featured in the rotating portrait exhibits and then in the book as well. And of course, you know, if he wants to do more shows and appearances, and people know where to contact him.
Chris Hagaseth, H-A-G-E-S-E-T-H. You don't have to remember that. What you have to remember is sweatingoutpd.com. That's for Dr. Chris. Janae, let's give them both your websites. Let's do
sure.
I Had a Dream, first of all.
IHadADreamProject.com.
And what are they going to find there?
They will find Christian's music video. We have a very talented videographer. And then they'll also find his feature story and his photos.
And his video with a drone?
Right.
It's astounding. She could make somebody who's fairly mediocre look like a real star.
Chris, if people wanted more information about how you're handling Parkinson's, you mentioned that you had the group put together of about how many people were there?
Over 20.
Over 20 people. You had some attrition, some didn't work, a couple did work.
Many people improved and thought it was valuable.
Were they people that you had one-on-one contact with?
All of these people, specialized guided imageries tailored to their suggestion, talked to them a lot about their exercise, modified exercise routines, and spoke to them once a week for at least 8 to 12 weeks.
So we knew that they were doing the exercise and the routines.
Yep.
For you.
I have changed now, and that is, as of June 1st, I will speak to anybody, anywhere in the world, free of charge, about Parkinson's. Because of the miracle of Skype, right now, I'm talking to people in Australia, South Africa, the Netherlands, UK, Canada, and the United States. But it's free.
For right now?
No, it's always going to be free because I'm starting a 501c3, and I will trust that the universe will bring people forth who will contribute to that so that I will always be able to talk to anybody regardless of economics.
What parting words would you like our listeners to take away from this show? Chris Hagaseth, who has literally reversed Parkinson's disease, contrary to every single thing we've been told and are used to hearing about in the common medical world.
I do want to make one more footnote about neuroplasticity. It's not new. It wasn't just invented. It's a process that's been with our brains since the time that we were one-celled organisms. It is a discovery that the brain can heal itself. The healing requires a creative mindset, and in the case of Parkinson's, mindful exercise. And I want to tell people that don't grow old. I'm going to accumulate lots of years, but I'm not going to grow old, because right now the creativity of youth is something I'm enjoying so much.
You're going to grow better. We're all going to grow better.
Yeah.